wanna be the best in the game. Invest in my name. Check no restraints, I'm obsessed with the pain. I ingest, I retain, assess and I change. Possessed by the thought I'll be free one day from society's restraints. Money, clout and fame, a disease, a plague. We all love to hate, have to play the game, have to make a name. All our insecurities are on display.
This is war with the enemy. Think that it was meant to be. Living in a time where disease is on.
Oh my god, we made it.
I can't believe it. This is it. This is the pilot episode of Tactical Awareness. I got it recorded. I got everybody together. And now you guys get to avail yourselves of my entirely inadequate post-production skills. So this is it. This is me adding in that sweet post-production and talking about what this is going to be. It's episode zero of Tactical Awareness, and this is going to be my new Infinity the Game podcast with Owen from Game with the Cooler and Dan, Orky Mini Wargaming Dan of Old Mini Wargaming fame. So what am I doing here? Well, you guys ask me a lot about how I keep all my energy with all the products I do with GMG, with writing books, with game projects. And the thing that I always come back to is I need to do stuff just for me. So that's what this is going to be. This is my just for me project. I'm kicking it off now. And I want this to be my something I do because I just want to do it, because I'm excited about this game. You guys ask me a lot what my favorite war game is, and it's usually I give like a long-winded, complicated answer. But the reality is, I usually end all of those statements with, but if I could just be playing any game right now, it'd probably be Infinity. It's the game I'm always excited to play and I never get tired of playing. And last month, back in October of 2022, I got to spend some time with one of my best friends. He came back to town. He'd been gone for a year and we both realized that we missed hanging out and we missed shooting the shit. And we missed playing the game that we had played together for like 7 years, almost weekly, until some like world events basically like took that like down a notch through ITS 12. So we decided we wanted to hang out once a week, and we decided we wanted to make stuff together again, and we planned that out, and that's what this has turned into. And we also realized that because we're dudes, and if we don't make our friendships a priority, they just die on the vine. We needed a reason to like get back together again and hang out, because his wedding obviously spurred that back in October. And so I'm going to throw a party. I'm going to throw an Infinity-based party every quarter, a Tactical Awareness tournament here in St. Catharines. It's going to have a bar and food, and it's just going to be a lot of fun getting together and playing games. And we want to invite everybody to come down and join us. So this is our plan, to be able to do something we like doing together, make something together, and hang out. And this is the first episode. This is episode zero, our proof of concept. I got them together in a Zoom call. We functionally talked about something. We go through the FAQs, our histories in Infinity the Wargame and in miniature wargaming in general, and some of our plans for the future. So coming up, there's going to be some different things topic-wise that we hit. We want to always hit like the news and events, and what's going on, and what our plans are, what our personal hobbies are, and the games we've played. But also do some breakdowns and some sort of like tactical advice. And I think it's going to be really useful because all three of us come to this from very different places. I've been playing Infinity all the way through since N1 with very little break. Owen's taken like a year off. He barely played any N4. He played a ton of N3, and he's just getting back in, and he's trying to figure out what it is that's changed and what he doesn't know. And Dan is brand new. We literally bullied him into playing the game. He's like, I don't need another miniature game. And I was like, well, I have this extra O12 box set sitting here in the studio. And we spent like 4 hours looting the studio for terrain for them and a starting army for him. And he went back and painted it all and then went and played a Malifaux tournament and used his prize winnings to get more Infinity stuff. And I think he has more painted Infinity miniatures, like new for this edition, than Owen does at this point, because he cranked out some beautiful O12 stuff. So we're going to have a Discord. There's a Patreon set up to try and support. I've already like sunk a bunch of stuff into this. Try and support the growth of the podcast. I also want to make it worth Owen and Dan's time, so that's all going to get split with them. I want to do swag. It's going to help. I've already rented the venue for the first Tactical Awareness tournament and ordered 2 ITS packs for it. So the goal here is that this turns into something. It's something specific and made just for me, and I think that it's gonna be a lot of fun. So let's dive in and talk about our backgrounds, and you guys can check out the episode zero of Tactical Awareness. All right, so I wanted to kick this off with some introductions. So today I'm going to be hosting. What I like to do is I like to round robin these things in the future. But I figure for the first one, I'm just going to do a sort of like a lead in, and then you guys can talk about who you are and how long you've been playing Infinity. So I've been playing since N1. I grabbed a Ariadna starter set like way back in like 2003 or 2004. And my first like actual sort of like finished army I painted was for a tabletop gaming news, like forum contest where you had to paint up 10 models for a game, and I painted 10 Infinity miniatures, and I think there's still actually pictures of them somewhere out on my WordPress blog from like a million years ago. And then in N3, I started playing with you, Owen. Actually, I drafted you to be my Let's Learn Infinity Together thing, and then I think you and I played pretty much more or less like once a week between 2015 and when you left for Calgary last year.
Yeah, other than the brief illness that prevented games, but
we still stuck in a few. We're like once a month we were in there playing games,
something like that. Yeah, I mean, I played in end of N2, like you said, or midway through it at whatever stage, and I picked up Military Orders because of course, and played them for a while. Though I think Hawk Islam really overtook them as my favorite faction in the game.
They were kind of your Gloom Spike Gits of Infinity. They had so many different ways you could build the army and different like things you could lean into. You didn't seem to get tired of them for most of N3.
Yeah, it wasn't until really nearing the end, and honestly I got very few games into N4 before either COVID prevented from playing and all the events stopped there, and then moving, having to rebuild and all that after having moved. So like I'm fairly inexperienced with the changes in the last like three-ish seasons against like N3, and like right. I continuously run into, that's not how that works. Yeah. Oh, that is how it works then.
I mean, the fire team has changed midway through you, like even just being like learning N4, and then you were kind of gone and you hadn't played in a while, and like the new fire team rules were a pretty significant change for a couple of your armies, right? Because you ran fire teams a lot with the Military Orders, obviously, and then you ran them sometimes. You ran a couple of like pretty mean MSV1. What are they? Not Govad links. What was the link?
No, those are that's the Govad one. The only link I reliably ran in Hawk Islam was 4 FO Ghoulies.
That's right.
That was the only link that I with Lila. That was the only link that I ran reliably. And then they just stood in the
flash
back
dance.
And yeah, just yelled at dance. People with BS20 flash pulses.
Because they're all whip 14 with big bonuses and plus three to hit.
Yeah, up to 24. They were yeah. marksman blinders. And that was how stupid. I kept beating the Avatar.
Good luck, bro. Yeah, the only problem is total immunity makes you immune to stun now. So you actually can't flash total immune models.
You couldn't before. N3, but the thing is total immunity was also much rarer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't
it's shown up now in like four or five more factions, whereas before it was like Katakuri and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That was
it. Katakuri had it, yeah. Robot girls and werewolves the only ones that had total immunity now. Yeah. I think the hoplites got it.
There's a whole list. Bronzes yeah. have it. There's mm-hmm. like there's a pile of them. I keep seeing it pop up. There's a mm-hmm. like a dozen characters.
A couple of Ariadna models have it. Just like natively, just like the heavy armor troops. The Cosmos Soldier, I think, has total immunity.
Yeah. But anyway, that's my experience with Infinity. Sweet.
Well, and you just got back in. So you just kind of went to your first tournament in Calgary last week, 2 weeks ago, and took hack.
Yeah.
And how was that like coming back after having not played for almost a solid year?
Oh, it's been more than a year. Like I left a year ago.
That's true.
I had not played a single game in a year. And then even before that, I had only played like you're saying once a month, but it was not like once a month we played games. Yet. It wasn't as true,
yeah.
though.
Yeah,
so it was probably like five games over 2 years or six games of Infinity over 2 years, and then a year off. And so like I came back and yeah, like the biggest challenge is just like rules that aren't the same, that mm-hmm. are the same, like baggage being different. Mm-hmm.
Especially and like then, how ingrained you were with it too. Like you knew up and down N3. So like
all of the interactions that took place and like mm-hmm. like the three things that I think were the most consistent that came up but jankiest in my opinion were active turn dodging to end in line of sight, but not proc reaction. The ubiquitous of hackers and the need of getting ARO spotlights out. And like those two came up all the time. And then from there, honestly, it's just army comps. There's a lot of models that have different profiles or the links.
Yeah. And so, stacking links properly too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, how about you, Dan? How long have you been playing Infinity?
Well, you see, I played my first game an hour ago.
And you got your first Infinity RE, what, 2 weeks ago when I shoved an O12 box in your hands?
Yeah, I was like, I'm not playing Infinity. I have too many other games. And you're like, here's some models. And I was like, God dang it.
I let you guys loot the studio for like 4 hours. Yeah, I was hell-bent that I was going to get to play Infinity when we went back to Calgary. So I made sure that Dan didn't have an excuse to not start playing Infinity. Yeah. But you actually got your army like almost all painted and stuff too. You really like dug into it.
I've started. I got it all on this old fantasy thing tray. But basically, I got my tag painted and a few of the fuzz bots, and then
everything. Oh, I love it.
Everything's base painted, and I got the bases painted. So it shouldn't be too long. I'm going relatively simple paint scheme.
I like the purple and gold. It's cool. It's really striking. It's like close enough to the standard O12.
Color yeah, scheme, basically, but just purple instead of blue, and otherwise the same as the O12.
So what do you think so far? First impressions, like what's your gaming history? Like you play Malifaux a great deal, right?
So not really, actually.
Okay. The last time I talked to you, you're like, I'm going to a Malifaux tournament. So I did.
So yeah, so I got a bunch of models from Ash, and then I go to a Malifaux tournament the next weekend, and then I get second place. And then with my prize money, I buy more Malifaux. I mean, not more Infinity. I'm like, I don't want.
I was like, what are you doing? I have all my Malifaux
models. I don't need any more. So I was like, well, let's find some. Well, look at all these Infinity blisters.
Yeah, like, you get the fuzz bots. But what else did you get that I didn't give you? You got the fuzz bots. You got the
fuzz bots. I got Arvati. I got some other thing. I don't know. There's so many names that I'm just like, I don't know. And I look at all the models and they're like, they look similar. I don't know what they do.
Dude in blue power armor.
I think it took me like an hour to figure out what models I had because you didn't give me any box or anything. It just gave me a box.
That's right. Just gave me a
box. I was like looking at all the pictures. I was like, what?
Is this, if they're not wearing helmets, they're kappas, and then the rest of them are guys in blue power armor. It's funny because O12 is almost to khaki pants what Hack Islam is to Infinity, where it's like it's just another guy with like cargo pants. Ash, no one knows which one's a Daylami. No one knows which one's a Kulam. You don't know. You can't tell me. That was Owen's thing. Owen's Hack Islam proxies were always just like, it's a guy with a rifle with like patch pocket pants. I don't know what it is. You don't know what it is. Today's a Daylami.
I knew what they were. I just didn't care. Right now, he's a Daylami. That's right. Whatever he needs to be for the given situation.
That's right. Yeah. He's wearing cargo pants, man. He's in Hack Islam. It's all fine. It's just cargo pants, the faction.
And then because a model addiction is real, before leaving the game store, I bought a box of copper bots.
Yeah, they're really nice. The copper bots are cool.
They're so diverse and useful, and it just seemed like something I should have.
Now you can run the missile bot hacking net that Owen's talking about that everyone hates. That seems to be like the starting place now for most list building is like, how many repeater bots can you fit in plus baggage bots plus missile bot for like 45 points? You've got five orders, and that's your second combat group. And then your 10 men are just hacker plus gunfighters plus midfield plus maybe some more bands, maybe like a tag.
And well, and the fuzz bots and copper bots, they're like 8 and 7 points each. Run out and increase your hacker network.
Yeah, and as we go through, we can talk more about that obviously when we do your faction focus. But you've got some really cool hacking action options actually in O12 to make that like a reality too.
I guess back to your original question of my gaming history was, I played a lot of 40k like back like 10, 12 years ago, and then I moved into some fantasy. I played a lot of War Machine when it was at its height, and that was a lot of fun. That was my main game for a long time. And then it transitioned as War Machine got annoying to play, and I moved to Malifaux. That was really fun. And then I kind of like dropped off. In the last 5 years, I haven't done tons of gaming. I'm kind of like back and forth between games and trying it out. I've played a lot of the new Age of Sigmar just recently, Gloomspite Gits and Seraphon, and they're a lot of fun. and I've always liked the fantasy aesthetic most. But then I found out that there was a budding resurgence of Malifaux in the area, so I was playing that, and I was having fun. And now it looks like I'll be adding Infinity to the table.
Sweet. Well, Infinity's fun because, I mean, the nice thing about Infinity is you paint a squad for Age of Sigmar, and you've got a new army for Infinity, and you get to like try out something totally new, which is one of my favorite selling points for the game is that you get a lot of miles out of a little bit of hobby effort, and it changes up your gameplay experience just painting a couple models. So exciting. So what I think is cool about this is we kind of have all various levels of experience and different like avenues to approach talking about the game. And I think it's going to be really interesting because I think all of us are going to have three very unique perspectives on talking about the new things happening. And when we get to doing faction breakdowns and talking about the different army lists and like critiquing lists and stuff, we're all going to have a very different viewpoint. So I think it's going to be really useful to have those discussions. So let's jump into the week's news. What's been going on in Infinity? And what's been going on with us? So we all kind of touched on what we've had going on recently in our little intros, but let's talk about what's going on in Infinity. And the big thing this past week was they dropped an FAQ, and that FAQ had some pretty big stuff in it, particularly some stuff that people were expecting and some stuff that people weren't expecting. So the big one that people, I think, weren't expecting is the super jump and climbing plus change, where you measure now from the top of your silhouette to do a climb plus or a super jump. So you basically get the height of your silhouette added to your movement. So this is like 2.2 inches in some cases for like a size 6 silhouette. I think it's 2.6 inches for a size 7 for a tag, and like 1.6 inches for like a normal size 2 trooper. So you're effectively adding like an inch and a half of free movement. And then they've also added vault to those skills. So if there's like a parapet or a railing, as long as it's smaller than your silhouette size, you just ignore it. You just don't measure that height up or down when you make that move. So with this new ITS season, having handed out a ton of super jump to models with total terrain, right? Or zero G terrain in the event pack. And a lot of models having super jump sort of natively, there's a big mobility boost there. So what do you guys think about that? What's your take on that?
I played that wrong, and my tag should have been a little bit faster as he was climbing around stuff.
Yeah, no, you have climb, not jump. Not
it's quite both. The same. It's both. Yeah, climb plus get it too. So you get to measure from that. So when you hit the wall, you measure the rest of the move from the top of the silhouette. So you measure from the front of the base to the wall, and then you can measure from the top of the silhouette of the move. So basically, whatever the difference is between the silhouette size and the wall he's on is the remainder of that move to get up, and you hurdle any stuff too. So that's 2.5 inches of extra movement for a size 7 tag, which is a big amount. Now the interesting thing is it doesn't work going down, because you only measure from the top, right? You measure from the bottom to the bottom, it's always going to be the same. So you don't gain any extra movement going down, like dropping, so you have to measure that whole move, but going up you actually get the height of your silhouette kind of like as an addition, and that's a big deal for some silhouettes. Like the Sujan with climbing plus is going to get to go like almost 10 inches climbing plus now when it hits a wall and goes up. That's a big move for like a first short skill. And then who else, what other things can do crazy fast, like, ones?
The Sikhs are just more maneuverable. I don't know, I think it's all going to come down to what your boards look like.
True.
Like it's only as relevant as the terrain around it. Like you play some of those boards that were at events where, oh, these are infinite tall buildings. Like that climbing plus doesn't mean anything on breaching door or breaching rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be ubiquitous? Well, does your table use a lot of really elevated terrain? Probably. Does it mean that your infantry might go on the ground floor now more and negate that benefit? Maybe.
I think that's my perspective is, I think that the thing where there is a lot of null deployment in the game, you know, I used to always say ABP, always be prone, right? If in doubt, just always be prone. I think that's going to be able to threaten some of that null deployment with things like super jumping war bands, adding movement to bears and adding movement to dogs, right? Because you're giving that size 6 silhouette almost 2 inches of extra movement for the super jump. So the first short skill means you can get up there and start throwing around double chain rifles onto like crouching missile bots and onto hack networks or hackers on roofs. It does feel like it's a bit of a pushback against that null deployment where you're sitting on roofs hiding and you're a little more exposed now because stuff can come get an angle to come see you and actually fight you.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to Dan in our last game there, the one of the terrain features that we have is essentially a sniper tower. Now, it wasn't in anyone's deployment, as you might expect. It was along the middle, but it meant that you could infiltrate onto it. And I'm like, infiltrate prone hacking camo.
Mm-hmm.
Go deal with that. And it's annoying, and there's no easy way to do it. And with the change to spotlight, it's even more difficult to dig that guy out, because even when you get up there, he's just a little better. Like...
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Make it easier to go up there and kill that guy. Yeah, sure.
A little faster. You can just go up the wall and then you can short skill your like shotgun at him or something like that with a template so you don't care about it. Actually, yeah. that's actually an interesting feature of the shotgun template. They don't get intuitive attack.
Yeah.
So you can't shoot cam markers with them. That's a skill, Dan, where as a long skill, so combining both your short and
we did it.
Do you did an intuitive attack for the game? Yeah.
I tried to do every type of attack.
Oh, nice. How did it come up?
Shooting chain rifles at Hippolyta. It's like, whatever. She tosses down an eclipse grenade. We shoot her with chain rifles. Everyone walks away.
Yeah, we just shrapnel into the dark, basically. And hope she explodes. Yeah, enjoy your -6 when you're just dodging like exploding shrapnel bombs coming out of this gun. That's funny.
She escaped alive, just barely.
I was actually wondering about that, whether or not do you suffer the -6? I didn't bother to look it up. I'm like,
for what? No,
but you're in smoke or in a template, out mm-hmm. of line of fire, and mm-hmm. hit by an intuitive template weapon that isn't a mine. Do you suffer a penalty?
To your dodge, you suffer the out of line of sight penalty, -3.
You do now.
You would when you get hit by it, yeah. No, okay. You would always, because you're dodging a template you can't see the origin of. You always would get the -3. The -6 is when you would shoot back against someone face to facing you, right? You're just getting the normal, like if someone, you get the same thing if somebody spec fired a grenade at you or
shot you. You still smoke dodge template weapons?
No.
Okay, no, you can't smoke dodge. Right. I thought that was the case.
Yeah, not against templates. No template attacks for smoke dodging because it's not face-to-face. You can only use a smoke dodge or a smoke grenade as a dodge if you are going to be face-to-face with the thing that's attacking you.
Yep, that's cool. The same then.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the second big thing is that they ratified the bikes, which I think is really exciting. In ITS 13, obviously, they changed the bikes a little bit where you could opt to cancel your Impetuous. So most bikers have the Impetuous skill, which means they can't natively use cover, right? They're too freaky to be able to effectively hide and like take advantage of cover and stuff like that. So they gave you the option to not be Impetuous. And there's only one non-Impetuous bike in the game. It's the 112 in Ariadna. He's got a bike profile now where he's just like a regular order. It's weird. But you can choose not to have it. And then the second thing is that the bike equipment piece used to say that you could not take advantage of cover while you were mounted on a bike equipment piece. That's gone. That's been totally overwritten. So that doesn't exist anymore. So bikes can now just natively get cover. And if they cancel their Impetuous, even if they get off their bike, they'll be able to take advantage of cover too, which I think is a great change because bikes were super fun last edition. And when they kind of rolled into 14 and that rule was just gone, people were a bit surprised. So I'm glad I just got like sort of ratified right into the core rules because I think it's a good change. Bikes are fun. They got used a lot. They didn't break the game. They just got included all of a sudden where they hadn't really been included before. And I think the trade-off of being able to use cover, but you trade that free order to do it, is balanced enough that it hasn't really done anything to like break the game. Because if you could get cover, put your Impetuous Gazis could, or not Gazis, Coon Bikers could still like throttle 24 inches across the board just using their own Impetuous regular orders. That would have been a bit much, but they didn't let you basically get all the movement that you could normally get if you leave them Impetuous and make them a little more suicide riders. What do you guys think about that?
I love motorcycles. I have a nice Coon Biker army. It's 28 inches, by the way.
Sorry, are they 14? Are they 8'6"? Yeah. Four. Oh, jeez.
No. Six points, eight ABA total.
You played that against me once, and it was an absolute, like, it was an absolute dumpster fire of a game. I remember you just ran over whatever I was playing.
That was the other thing, I guess, that changed in the new edition, is that I'm only allowed 15 models-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an M4, yeah.
This list doesn't work anymore. All my bikes, all of those bikes, they have nothing to do anymore.
There was a lot of bikes. It was Kassenbeg and what, like 10 bikes or something like that. It was a whole combat group of just bikes, and then it was backed up by whatever other cheap shit that you wanted to have in the combat group.
I think it was like 15 bikes for a total of 100 points.
And, so stupid.
And then the rest of the army. Yeah.
And then double Maggie, just bring up the rear. Yeah. That's another thing.
Couldn't do that at the time.
They couldn't do that at the time. They got rid of the Maggie profile that doesn't have a 360 visor. So you can only take expensive Maggie now. There's no more like 60 point cheap Maggie. Your favorite Maggie.
Yeah. They gave him baggage.
They did give him baggage, yeah. So you can reload your pictures now off of Maggie.
But yeah, as far as the bikes are concerned, like, once again, I think it's fine. It's going to come down to how your terrain is set up. Bikes still have obnoxious issues going up and down terrain. Unless movement has changed significantly in that, like, you don't need to place the model where it'll fit, your bikes are kind of like stuck on the ground floor with maybe a few exceptions, and give them cover. You can only have 15 models, so the bikes were usually the cheap option as a way to like offset individual pieces, with the exceptions of like Montessas and the US Ariadna one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Mavericks.
Because like the JSA one has one nice bike, and then the other ones are like cheap bikes as well, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, there's a Spitfire profile, there's a Hacker profile. They're both pretty good.
But you pay for that. So you pay for that. Sure, yeah. That's fine. Seems like a reasonable change to me.
Mm-hmm. It just gets them on the table more too. I think that the Maverick bikes might get used more now too, because they can have cover, because they're basically grunts, right? So you can roll up with the Mavericks, then jump off the bike. So you coordinate. Actually, I think you can actually Harris the Mavericks. I'm pretty sure they have a Harris profile, which I think is amazing, because I have a lot of Mavericks I've never painted and I could do something with. I'm pretty sure US Ariadna has a three-man Harris option for Mavericks. It does. Yeah, you can Harris Mavericks with a 1-1-2. So you could have a Doctor and two Mavericks, and the Mavericks all have MSV1 as well, which is a weird like get, but they have this like... they have this like surprisingly good weapon loadout for being like random bikers. Yeah, they have, and they all have mimetism built in. So you have a multi-spectral visor level 1 and mimetism -3. You lose the mimetism and the like dodge bonus when you get off. You just have the visor still, but you're still an armor 3 BS-12 size 2 MSV1 guy with like a rifle, flash pulse, an AP close combat weapon, or a boarding shotgun. You can get a submachine gun light rocket launcher profile or an AP Spitfire. And they could just roll up in a Harris, you know, shooting on the way, and then get out and be a little Harris team of like just dudes, right? Like just grunts with a Doctor rolling through the middle of the table.
I think the Kuroshi rider being mimetism, but also an FO and a bike with 8.6.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, now if you give that person cover, you now have an 8.6 specialist with mimetism and a smoke grenade launcher.
Yeah.
For 27 points.
For 27 points.
And she's not really that anyone plays that faction, but you know.
I play that faction.
I tried to pick it up the other day and I can't buy any of the boxes.
They're just not in stock. I know. Anymore. It's weird because stuff's rolling in and out right now, I think, because of the changing of the packaging and stuff too. But
CC 23 Martial Art 1.
Yo, Jimbo has a motorcycle as well. It's another 8.6. Right. Yeah. Yo, Jimbo can take one. And then you've got Courage, Dodge plus 2 inches, Immune to Criticals, Impetuous, Martial Arts 4, Min -3, Mind Layer, No Wounding Cap. And he's got crazy koalas. So your bike for 20 points can like fly up 14 something inches. And he'd just be a regular. You can cancel his Impetuous. Just start dropping crazy quals everywhere. Just be like,
cover for -6, mm-hmm. And then he'll smoke dodge with no penalty off of his smoke grenade launcher.
And he keeps his smoke grenades if he gets off too, which is cool. Yeah.
Well, because he has smoke grenades and a smoke grenade launcher, yeah. So he dodges on 17s with his smoke grenades.
Mm-hmm. Or he can put him around, put him far away if he wants with the grenade launcher too. Because he's BS-12, which for like one of the
like fighty guys is actually pretty high. I think even Sleight of Token's only like an 11. Yeah, Sleight of Token's only 11.
And immune to crits? Why not?
I know, like, why not be immune to crits? And have crazy koalas and a weird contender plus one burst. Because contenders are great because they're double action, but a plus one burst one, which is burst two, is actually a fairly cool active turn gun for just taking random shots.
The JSA have some fun bikes. But even then, who plays JSA? So it'll be fine.
I just feel like if there's like a dead spot in army list construction, then I like the fact that Corvus Belli is doing something about it. You know what I mean? They're looking at it and going, people aren't really using bikes. What could we do? And it's a really simple fix, but it makes it so that you actually go to your list construction. You go like, huh, I never looked at this guy before, but if he wasn't impetuous, he's actually got some legs. That's kind of cool.
If he could take cover.
Yeah, if he could take cover, it'd be really cool. But I mean, a Harris of MSV1 Mavericks in the middle of the board all of a sudden, it's kind of neat with their armor three. So the next one is, during your main part of deployment, can you reposition troopers and deployables? This is an interesting one. Basically, you know, when you put down models during deployment and start tweaking them, like moving around to make sure they're like in the right spot or they're in a relevant range, you can, but you can't pick up and move a model again after you've checked their zone of control. So when you start putting a fire team together, as soon as you check zone of control on a model, you're not allowed to move it anymore. So if you beef that eyeballing, you're actually kind of stuck where you are. It's an interesting ruling. But it does mean that like during that coherency check, you have to like get it right, or you're not in that fire team all of a sudden, right? You need to be able to place the fire team token and have everybody in the right spot. You can't nudge them afterwards.
If that's during deployment.
Yeah. Yeah. When you deploy. So you can no longer like nudge your models around and make sure they're in the fire team range. You have to place them all first, then you place your fire team lead token. And if somebody's at range, you don't get that fire team bonus. You have to move them back in later and then reform the fire team. So you got to be careful when you're eyeballing your zone of controls and stuff like that.
Know your 8 inches.
Yeah, exactly. Or make sure there's a model in the center that is clearly, you know what I mean, like the hub that they can all spoke off of.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all. This is stupid. Yeah. Here's what you do. You say, hey, I need you to look away because I need to check a zone of control or coherency on a model that may or may not be a mine layer or decoy or hollow echo.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, look, everything's fine. Like, just don't bother. Just when you're deploying, just deploy your models.
I
or you sit there and you're like, I'm going to measure my deployment zone.
Definitely feels like the kind of FAQ ruling that only applies to like the certain type of player, right? Where only certain type of people are going to give two shits about that.
Because you
like,
can measure your deployment zone during your deployment. Otherwise, yeah. How could you? So yeah. You just do a bunch of trig. Like you literally lay the tape measure at the 12 inch line,
and then you're gonna get a war machine with this, where you start checking your what is it, your control zone to do subsets of your control zone to like check pre measure and stuff like that.
Oh, I gotta make sure. Oh, if you measure your zone of control, you can't move them again. I have never done that. I've only ever measured my deployment zone. I know that it's 24 inches across, I'm pretty sure. So I did the measuring tape from my left side to my right side.
Yeah.
And then I did another one from my back to the front.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is that anyone who does want to like fuck about and be a dick about it, there is what you just said, there is a million ways you could push back
and
against
to make
it
sure that my deployment is actually 48 inches across. So I laid a measuring tape across, and then I had to make sure it was 12 up. So I laid that across. I have never measured my zone of control.
It's all just deployment measuring. Yeah. So the next one is, what happens if a peripheral or their controller enters the isolated state? So if a peripheral like a Palbot or a sync model gets isolated, they become disconnected. So they don't work anymore. So you can actually, weirdly, if you isolate an antipode, right? If you have like a Strelok with an antipode on it, you could isolate the antipode and it just disconnects and stops working for some reason, because it's technically a peripheral. Same thing would go with like flamethrower.
Was that not the case? I tilted this?
Well, they don't have an order. They're not regular or irregular.
Oh, so there that's was, right.
I right. So like, because they don't generate an order, it's like, if you isolate them, what the hell happens? It doesn't technically say, because they're not a trooper model. So now you can do that to peripherals and stuff, and it disconnects them. And vice versa, if you isolate a controller model that has a peripheral, then all the peripherals become disconnected because he can no longer communicate with them.
We had a long talk about this with Jammers at one point in N3, and the end outcome was what is now the stated outcome here, where we agreed that you're isolated and thus no longer able to be affected by orders. Thus, can't.
thus does not work. Also, vice versa, the ruling is in there that if you become unisolated, so like you reset it off or an engineer fixes you, then your peripherals all reconnect because obviously they come back into contact with you. So they lose the disconnected state. The next one, this is my personal favorite because I'm building an OSS army right now. Can a fire team's burst support bonus be combined with other burst mods? So for example, the enhanced reaction arrow from an Evo bot. And the answer is yes. So take that fire teamable missile bot where your missile is now burst 3. So you have a burst 3 missile launcher and arrow.
Yes, but not during your aiming the rocket thing.
No, it's in reaction. No, not for guiding. Not guiding. I'm talking about like just sitting in the open and you decide that you want to put enhanced reaction on a fire team like missile bot. And that missile bot now has 3 bursts or something ridiculous like that. So that's an interesting one. I mean, even just like Dakinis with a sniper rifle, you take a Dakini with a sniper rifle, stick it in a rooftop, and it's now a burst 3 sniper rifle with double action rounds in arrow, which is a great like hit piece.
Do they still have the Aspara with a rem driver?
Yep. So you can also rem drive it. And you can definitely do that too. So you can become like BS-13 and then also have the enhanced reaction on you because rem driving and support wear aren't the same thing. So they don't cancel each other out. And and the fire team bonus is on top of that. So you could have an effective BS, like good range.
13 goes bonus. To 16 goes to ignores cover.
Well, you can't marksmanship and enhanced reaction at the same time, right? Because they're both support wars. You can only have one or the other.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of an offensive group.
Yes, you could also do it offensively. Yeah. You could do that and then switch to the enhanced reaction at the last order and have them go into the point defense mode, go into sentry bot mode.
Yeah, mimetism BS-16 base marksman sniper bot.
Yeah. Two other so stupid. Two other kind of minor ones. The first one is you can no longer shoot from a position you've never been in. This is it doesn't say I can't, so I can one that came up a few times. It was mostly just like an intent thing for the rules designs. It says skills can only be declared from a position that the trooper's already been in or moved through during the current order. Therefore, the active trooper cannot declare a skill from a portion they have not reached yet. So basically it was like, where is it? By adding this important box, our intention is to end all the annoying situations that have been generated by the modification of the order sequence, but keeping the flexibility when declaring skills. So if you still want to be able to declare shoot as the first half of your order, however, if you really want to shoot a trooper behind a wall, you must move first and then shoot. So like basically what people were doing is they're declaring a shoot skill, then waiting for people to declare AROs. And if you didn't have, if you declared a shoot skill and you're in 8 inches of a trooper, that trooper would have to declare their arrow now. And then you would move around the corner and they couldn't declare line of fire to you. So the only thing they could do is dodge out of line of sight. And then you would move around the corner and resolve your shooting action. It's really stupid. And it was like a corner case scenario where people were like using the operation order of skills to create a situation where they're already shooting their gun without a target. They end zone of control of like something that they would have to use their arrow window to declare an ARO. And that arrow is limited by the fact they can't see them. And then they would shoot around the corner and shoot that guy with all the penalties associated with it. So it's like a really
I've been dumb... selling this game as people aren't dicks in it.
I like the fact that the rules design team literally said annoying questions. So I think we understand that they want to put that one to bed. It's dumb. So you can never declare a skill that you couldn't possibly perform at the time you declare it. Because you don't have a target for your gun, then you have to declare your target when you declare the BS stack.
Also, someone told me I couldn't shoot and then move. I had to move and then shoot.
Yeah. So you have to move. You typically don't, but you can't declare the AR. You can't declare the shoot attack if you don't have a target. Because when you declare a shoot attack, you declare the weapon you're using and the target of the attack as part of the order declaration. And
if I did have line of sight to a target, I could shoot and then use my second movement profile. Sure.
No, you would just use your first move skill. So the movement skills are the time in which you move. So the number of times you move that turn. So the first time you move during a turn, use your first movement skill. The second time you move during a turn, use your second movement skill.
Oh, okay.
So it's just the number of times you move, not what order you declare your orders in. The short and the long of it is when you declare a BS attack, people were saying you could declare a BS attack against something you couldn't see and have line of sight to, and then move around the corner and then resolve it. Yeah. And
it's all simultaneous.
Because you can move and then shoot from where you were, so it doesn't really matter in that case.
But the window for the guy reacting meant that he wouldn't be able to shoot back. Because he's in your zone of control, he has to declare a reaction now, and he can only dodge because he can't see you. So it's like, I guess I'm dodging or I'm doing nothing. And if I do nothing, then when you come around the corner, I've lost my opportunity to RO. And it was a dick move, and people didn't like it. and the last one's just power team composition bonuses. They're private until you actually declare use of them during a turn. So like, that's to kind of cover the fact that sometimes there are members in a fire team, like a hollow mask model, where it's somebody is not who they're supposed to be. And it might look like that fire team is going to have certain bonuses, but they end up not having certain bonuses. You don't have to reveal your bonuses to your opponent, giving away the fact that one of those guys might not be who they appear to be, until you actually like declare a skill and resolve the order and stuff like that. So it's a neat little thing. It just protects you from, like, let's say I have Catherine Cho, who's a O12 model. She's a Cybermask model. She's very often like hiding your chain of command or hiding your lieutenant and like pretending to be a Kappa, you know what I mean? Hanging out in a Kappa link, or pretending to be a bronze, hanging out in like a big scary link where no one's going to go near her. I don't have to declare that. Well, she technically doesn't allow me to do that. I don't get my good fire team bonus because she's not a pure link all of a sudden, and give away the fact that she's in there. So those are the big ones. They all, I don't know. I always find these things so encouraging. I find the FAQs from Cardsbell really encouraging because they feel like they address real questions. And I feel like they're always addressing like actual stuff that I have questions about in Infinity. So they feel pretty good. I know you guys have both not been in it for super long, but a couple of those things I think are things that Owen and I have actually talked about in the past, like in previous, like early, late N3, early N4 games. So it's cool to see them actually finally get addressed.
I don't like the deployment one. I think that's stupid. Still opposed to it.
Yeah.
It is. The other ones, sure.
Go on. Well, why? Why do you think it's stupid? Do you think it's because of who it's answering the question for? Or
I think it just throws a way around it.
Yeah, the fact that there is a completely legal but obnoxious way to completely circumvent it makes it irrelevant. Because I'm just all like, you can lay a measuring tape horizontally and check your deployment zone, and vertically and check your deployment zone. Thus, you move those two measuring tapes and are always measuring your deployment zone, but can see your, the only thing you can't do is the diagonal for your zone of control, but you'll have your zone of control all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's literally just a like a little screw you for someone who's less experienced at the game.
Yeah.
And then also, it also feels like,
go on, Dick, because I think you're going to say what I was about to say.
The type of person who would be the guy that'd be fiddly would be the one to obnoxiously measure and take tons of time doing it anyway. So it only exasperates the problem, possibly.
Mm. Yeah. And it's only a gotcha in a way that you didn't actually play to do. Like it's a gotcha without a game mechanic behind it. It's like when they had the Intel card that removed a specialist. You didn't actually do anything. Your opponent was like, boy, I sure want to play. I'm going to put my link team here. And it's like, that guy's 8 1/4 inches out. You get nothing. I'm first. Here we go. Like, that's what you've done. And, or they're like, oh, I put this guy a little bit out, and you go to nudge him back, and he's like, no. Like, why is that a thing? Just let them nudge their guy back. It's literally deployment. Either you're suffering because you had to deploy first, because you lost a relevant role that was a thing that you had as much control as you have over roles, or choosing deployment, or your second player, and you're reacting to the first guy anyway, who doesn't have any say anymore. So who cares? Just let them measure their control, like, or move the model again.
Yeah, it does feel like also the person who would be adamant about enforcing this rule is the person that used to gotcha at moving your turn counter in Blood Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, it's the kind of rule where, like, it's almost designed to be not a negative play experience, but it's designed to force discomfort
to not be purely negative. Like my change would be, once all models are placed on the table, you can no longer move them.
Yeah.
And then that way you put your link team down first, so you can like wiggle them around. And then as soon as your final model is placed, that you declare is your final model, then you're done and you can't move anyone anymore, including token states and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. And then that way you don't end up in a situation where someone's constantly moving stuff around and measuring every control and all that.
Yeah. And like, and doing that like off turn nudging, you know what I mean? Asking for like, not a do-over, but like this guy's not quite in my zone of control. Can I just, or I realize, it does put a downforce on that. Yeah. I mean,
but once again, that's in gameplay. That's in you playing. You played and didn't play it quite right.
And also that happens in Infinity all the time too. Mismeasuring.
Deployment is not the same as like gameplay. That's my perspective anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, everything's fine. That one's
even just like the simple things of like you move a fire team. This is one of my problems with fire teams. You move a fire team and you forget that at the beginning and the end of a movement, all the fire team members have to be in coherency. Because it used to be that you would just move the fire team leader, and if they all ended in coherency, you were fine. You could drag guys back into coherency that didn't start at the beginning of the turn. This is not how it works anymore. Everyone has to start and end in coherency. So you can't, like, your point man with the machine gun might be way on a right-hand wing, and you can't actually make him the fire team lead right now until the rest of the team repositions. It can lock down a link team, and some people just forget midway through a game. They forget where their fire team members are. They activate the wrong model because they're in a fire team, and they normally can do that, and they just broke everybody out of their link.
And now it comes down to you. Are you the person who's going to go, sorry?
Sorry, whoopsie.
Yeah, sorry about that. You shouldn't have put that down. My bad. Mm-hmm. Or your bad, I suppose. No, you can't come back. No, you can't pick up the token and put it on a different guy and have the exact same game state, thus continuing the game. I want a gotcha. This is how I'm going to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
This makes me a better player.
It's an until dice are rolled kind of moment. You know what I mean? Like, but if you've gone that far and then dice are rolled, I mean, you'd probably figure it out during the dice pool creation for an attack where you'd go, oh wait, is everyone in zone of control? Right?
No, because you would have had to do it right at the beginning. You wouldn't be able to check it at that stage. I guess you could, because you'd have to be at the beginning. Yeah. Either way, it's the same kind of idea.
It's the same concept, yeah, where you need to be able to, you need, like, I feel like it's because it's a game that rewards good communication so well and requires you to be able to talk to your opponent and talk about your intent and be very like descriptive of your order resolution and stuff like that, which is one of the reasons I struggle to play on Tabletop Simulator, because that's not part of the game so much, right? Because the measurement's all perfect and there's not really any human error in there because it's being done digitally for you. That rules like this just create an opportunity for, I don't know, for there not to be able to be like a two-player agreement on how to resolve like a small mistake or a small issue like that, because dice haven't been rolled and the game state really isn't destroyed yet. And you just go back to trying to reset it to something that's legal.
I think it's just, again, I don't know much about Infinity, but it sounds like something there's an adjustment period as people just learn how to use link teams and move them around. And it's going to be a lot more as bunched together instead of as much spread out.
I think what Owen said is true, though, Dan, where it's going to punish newer players worse than veteran players.
Yeah.
Right. But it's the kind of thing that a veteran player, it's the thing that a veteran player will look at and try and got you a new player on.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
If you don't say anything, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's only relevant when you make the like, nope. Whoa, right there. Like that's that's what you're doing to somebody.
Yeah.
Because if we're both new and you mess that up, nothing happens. You just move all your guys.
Yeah.
But if we're not both new,
and no one catches it either,
right? Because no, you don't know. Because that's the thing.
It's not in the rulebook. It's in continues. FAQ. Yeah, and the game just goes on.
But a veteran player will sit there and be like, you messed up. I get what I want. You get punished. Ha ha ha. Spend a command token. Reform the link with that guy in the middle instead of that guy. Therefore, now you have a link team that's the right. So I just cost you 1/4 of your command resources. Like I get that it's an easy resolution. It's just it's still a silly. Silly ruling.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I get why it's in there. I think that I think that there will be unintended consequences for new players. It's the kind of thing that like forces growth through like a bit of like adversity and punishment. And I don't know if that's the best way to do it.
Especially when that happens in deployment, because you're going to learn.
The game hasn't right started yet.
But, well, no, because the game could end right then and there.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm going first. You messed up this deployment. Your link team isn't a link team.
Mm-hmm.
That might have a significant outcome on your ability to stop me from killing you.
Yeah, a lot of downforce. So all of a sudden, if that's not a 5-man link and you just roll up on it, you kill that odd man out, and now they never get that link bonus back.
Yeah.
So I like that. At what point does the actual link team break? Like,
so what would happen in that case is when you put the link token down and then the link leader, you would then check her zone of control to make sure all the members are in. That allows you to determine the size of the fire team. And what this is describing is that you check that zone of control and you realize that one of the models you thought was 8 inches away is 8.5 inches away. You're no longer allowed to move that model back into coherency. What would happen normally in every game of Infinite ever played is you'd go, whoops, that guy's not quite close enough. And because you're still deploying models, you would nudge him in and make sure he's part of the fire team. Yeah. What this ruling is saying is you're no longer allowed to touch that model because you measured your zone of control. What Owen and I are saying is, that just seems dumb. The game hasn't started yet. And
wait, which model are you not allowed to move?
The one that's out of coherency. Any of those models. Yeah. Any of the ones that you checked from her zone of control. Any ones you measured from her too, you're not allowed to move anymore.
Wait, so if you just like measure, can't you just measure your zone of control into Abyss?
No. Not during deployment anymore, not because of this FAQ.
Yeah, so you can measure it during your active turn to determine what abilities you have at the starter end of your move.
Yeah.
But you can't do that at the starter end of deployment.
So and once you do during deployment, you're stuck.
Okay, so say I deploy one person that was going to be in the link team or the fire team, and then I measure her zone of control.
You don't put the... You can't, first off.
Can't do that?
No. And then you can't... You don't do that until all of them are deployed to... Because then you place the token down saying it's a link team, at which point you measure, are they all actually able to be in the link team?
From the leaders, from the leader that has the token next to them. And that's when they can no longer be moved.
That's when you measure your zone of control.
Yeah. And the arbitrariness of that is what Owen's saying is, well, you could just measure all the zone of controls by using measuring your deployment zone and using subsets of it to measure everything. And like, it's still on the honor system, because what Owen's saying is, no, I'm just checking my deployment, even though everyone really knows he's checking his.
Yeah, I only put 6 inches like, out on my measuring tape, but it's because it's half of my deployment. I need to know where half of my deployment
is. That's right. Yeah.
Also, I measured 36 from the left for no reason. Yeah. Just wanted to make sure that was actually a 48 inch table.
But it's, or even just he's got it 48 inches out and he's just measuring subsets inside of it. Like it's, it, everyone knows he's actually checking his zone of control. And so, because you can arbitrarily also do it.
I don't think that objective is in the right spot. Let me measure it again.
Yeah, it doesn't. Sure. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it makes as much sense.
I like how the online.
It feels like enforcement. You know what I mean? It feels like enforcement of a rule where you could just nudge it in because the game hasn't started yet.
We'll go to bat over super jump and climbing changing for 2 inches of movement, and then we're going to spend 25 minutes talking about whether or not you should be able to measure your zone of control in your deployment phase.
Because I think one enhances the game by increasing your mobility and making there be less non-interactive actions during the game, and the other one feels arbitrary. Like it just feels like, but why? Like why do we need to punish people forming link teams? Like this doesn't, why can't they just nudge those models back in? It's not hurting anything. It's them setting their deployment up. And because they didn't eyeball it perfectly the first time around, they can't move these guys anymore. It doesn't add anything. It just punishes. It's just like an enforcement rule. And so it just feels weird. It's totally weird to the rest of the changes. It's a bunch of giving changes almost throughout the entire FAQ. And then you've got this one where it's like a rule now. You can't do this.
We're going to smooth things over and increase player agency, except.
So fuck you, link teams. We've already taken you down a peg. Now we're taking you down a half peg.
Second question.
Sure.
So when you're moving link teams during like your turn, like during the game, when you choose the leader, they have to have everyone's in the 8 inches.
Yeah, everyone needs to be in their zone of control at the start of the movement. Yeah. And then they have to end inside her zone of control too to maintain the fire team bonus. Anyone that doesn't falls out of the team.
And the only way to get like them back
in all is points to... of movement?
At the beginning at the end. And end.
Yeah,
at
the beginning and end. Okay, so
they, they can jump out and like, and then as long as they end back inside that 8-inch bubble, okay, then you're fine. The zone of control is basically the same as like your command range in War Machine.
Right.
Right. You move the leader in War Machine, and then everybody has to end that movement inside.
But
so you started that movement in command, you end in command too.
But the difference is you can change who's the leader, but then if it's on the peripheral, you can exclude partier, and then they would just be kicked out immediately, kind of thing.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, they would just be kicked out at the end of the move, or in some cases the start of the move, because you didn't they wouldn't be in at the beginning of the game because
you deployed wrong.
Because you deployed bad, and so now the FAQ kicks in.
Cool. Okay.
It feels like the least ever going to be enforced part of this FAQ. I will literally never force an opponent to not have that to not be able to have that miniature. Obviously, Dan, yes. I mean, you're coming from Alpha and you're coming from War Machine. That's just, it's the nature of the game.
I don't understand this rule, so I'm going to enforce it.
That's right. This seems arbitrarily in my favor, so I'm going to enforce this rule. So there it is. That's the FAQ. Other stuff, we had a few new releases get announced for December and January. I think the hottest two items that I was excited about were the new Morat stuff. There's a boarding shotgun Zerat, which I think is really cool. The boarding shotgun profile for the Morats is the one I don't have a model for, which is convenient. I have the it used to be a multi-sniper model. Now it's like a multi-marksman rifle or a marksman rifle. And I have the Hacker. But the boarding shotgun, I think, is the Ford Observer, which I'm pretty excited about because that profile adds, I think, a deployable repeater option, but I can't remember if that's true. It's Mine Layer, actually. Sorry, Shock Mines. And then the other one's Shock Mines, too. So Shock Mines is cool. I'm excited about that. Having, like, a midfield Mine Layer that can, like, move up with infiltration and then drop a bunch of mines down in the middle of the table can be really handy. And because she's got terrain total too, that's going to mean that in some missions she's got super jump. And -6 super jump boarding shotguns sound real good. Sound like they can actually get some work done. Then in that same like upgrade box, there's the Rindak with the Hut Shock. Have you seen this model?
I'm looking them up right now.
He's got literally a hook shot, and he's like partially a cyborg. The new designs for the Morats make me really happy. They have like kind of almost like an orky thing to them where they just keep fighting until they can't fight no more. They get more and more like robo bits added to them until they can't actually fight anymore. And he's got a big hookshot, but weirdly he's a paramedic. he's a dude who loves killing, but he also loves putting people's arms and legs back on. So he's a medkit +1 burst. He's got climbing plus, dodge +1 inch, dodge +3. So he dodges on 16s. He's dodge -3, which we think is a typo. And then he's immune to crits, immune to shock, no wounding cap. He's arm 3 BTS 3 with one wound, religious, censor, and veteran.
Hey, so they gave the other Pandora dodge -6 with double medkit. That's why they're slow. You can't dodge. You're carrying two medkits.
I'm +3 -3. It doesn't make any sense. One of those is true. I don't know which one. And he's 6-2 move with that climbing plus. So he's got a bunch of different like FTO options, or sorry, one FTO option and a bunch of forward deployment options. You can have a multi-rifle +1 burst, I think is actually probably the best profile. Because the multi-rifle +1 burst means he's got almost a Spitfire, but it's AP. Right, so it's a 16-inch range like brawler gun with four dice, AP, or he's got two burst DA, which is kind of cool too. He can go double action and still get a second burst. And he's got a Blitzen, a heavy pistol, paramedic, and a paraclose combat weapon. He's a really neat miniature. And then the last one is the drop troop, the drop robot. Actually, the drop suit Tariot. It's a combat jump explosion. We all know how much Owen loves combat jump explosion. He's immune to shock, parachutist, religious trooper, remote presence, and veteran. So he's like a little robot with like a wingsuit that comes down with either a boarding shotgun or a red fury, One's a paramedic, weirdly, and he explodes out of the sky with arm one BTS-6. And when you place a, so for you, Dan, when you place a combat jump model, you put him anywhere on the table typically, and then you make a fizz check. And if you pass your fizz check, you can just be there. You're just on that spot on the table. If you fail, you go back to one of your deployment edges and you just walk on instead. But when you place an explosion model, you place the blast template down next to them, and everybody in the blast template next to you takes a damage 13 hit. So this guy is like the bane of that missile bot. He just comes hurtling out of the sky onto that rooftop where the missile bot is and just instantly like crumps him with an explosive like dive from space. And then you also have to dodge. So like normally you don't want to drop in the line of sight of people, because this guy arrives with an explosion. He just arrives next to the thing that's going to ARO him, and then just like that guy's got to dodge or he's going to eat a template, right? Huh. And then next order, you're there with a boarding shotgun, being like, knock, knock, Dr. Shotgun's here. So I'm very excited about that profile. And it's making the Morats a little less one-dimensional, which I think is cool, because they were a little, we only do one thing before that.
What else have we got this? We got Skotsgård's getting an update.
Yeah, new monster Skotsgård's.
New McMurrow, who's a long time from having a new model.
Yeah, he's going to be... Well, it's funny, it's actually his third model. Remember, he used to look like a Lion-O in first edition. He was Lion-O, then he was like a cat. Like right now, he's actually a cat, and now he's going to be an actual wolf. I'm super pumped for that miniature, and McMurrow is amazing. Who can take... What armies do you have that can take McMurder? Is it...
A bunch.
I was gonna say, I know Dan's O12 can't. He doesn't work for cops because he's a mercenary. But my nomads can take him, so I'm definitely painting one.
If I've already got one painted, it's gonna be Hawk Islam.
Yeah, I think Rama can take him. No, they get Kerman Johns actually, though. Is it Kapakalki? No, they get Yan Yans
and McMurrow's in the Assassins.
That makes sense. The best army. just give him to Baron.
Odds are slim he's going to be in military orders, but we'll check.
No, he's not. There's no way. So this guy's basically a for hire dog soldier, Dan. And dog soldiers are one of, like, you'll remember the first time you play against them, because they start off little, and as soon as you warn them or wound them, they turn into giant werewolves, like 10-foot tall werewolves. And they just keep coming. They have total immunity, which means they ignore all of like the ammunition types for the most part, except viral. So viral stuff works on them, but it means that explosive, double action, AP, shock, nothing works on them. You just ignore those rules completely. So they only ever usually take one wound at a time. And when you're fighting the normal ones, they start as a human and then they turn into a two wound monster. So they effectively have three wounds you have to get through while they're like hurtling towards you at 6-4 movement, dodging on 16s, throwing smoke grenades, and then when they finally get like up close to you, you know, hitting you with chain rifles and decent fizz 16 like close combat abilities and stuff like that too. So they are very cool. And McMurrow is a mercenary one, so a bunch of different armies basically get access to this guy, and he's very popular because he's an even better version of the dog soldier with like a CC of 23. So he never misses in close combat, and he adds 3 to his roll. So face-to-face, he's great. But he also has the berserk rule. So if he decides he just wants to hit you, he just hits you. And if you hit him back, no, so what?
Berserk means... His claim to fame over the normal ones is berserk and martial arts.
Yes, and an APDA close combat weapon. So he's got a double action close combat weapon too. Whereas the normal ones only have AP close combat weapons. And then he's also got, like you said, level 3 martial arts, which means he's going to be plus 2 damage. He'll be damage 18. No, yeah, damage 18 with his super close combat weapon. And then plus 3 to hit. So he actually be on 26 if he hits you face to face. So he's real good at getting there by throwing smoke grenades and going in, like, he'll just fight a tag in melee. He'll fight your Zeta in close combat and 9 times out of 10 just like rip its arms off and beat you to death with it. Because you can't see through the smoke on the way there.
Because you'd be armor 4 and he'd be damage 18 and you'd roll 2 armor saves whenever he hits you.
Sometimes 3, because if he rolls 20 or higher on his hit, it becomes a critical. And he's adding 6 to the dice roll.
Yeah.
And you're hitting him back at minus 3 because of his martial arts. So your martial arts becomes, I think 17 goes to 14. So you actually have a failure state. That's what you learned in your first game against Owen. Just roll 6s.
I need a 3. I'll just roll the 3.
It'll be fine. But then Dan does get something. He gets the patrol bot, which I'm excited about. Roadbot for 012, which is the transforming bike. Let's see if I can find it. I can pull up a picture of it here because it's pretty rad.
I told myself I wouldn't buy more models until I get some games in, but
here we have until January.
So many more models.
Yeah, finish. Have it be your reward for painting, because you can also get a Saladin. He's pretty cool.
I'm glad that the Moran Masai are getting a new model, but they're just Securitate.
I know. Go ahead.
Like, at least keep the capes. Like,
yeah, they did them a little bit dirty. They don't look as cool as they used to. They had a cool kind of like Polynesian hunter kind of thing going on before, and now they're just sort of just dudes in the ribbed like spacesuits that all the nomads seem to like walk around in.
Yeah,
and they're using like 10-year-old Crazy Quaw miniatures. They're using
Crazy Koalas, yeah.
Yeah, like the exact same ones from that I have with my current Moran, which is a shame because the profiles for Morans are amazing. Like every Nomad player, typically, if they're running a hacking net, will start their list building with like two Morans because Morans are fantastic. Let's take a look real fast because I can take AVA too for them. Yeah, Moran Masai Hunters. Courage, Ford Observer, Infiltration, -3, Mind Layer, Stealth, Total Terrain, 17 points with a repeater, Crazy Koalas, Decharges, Combi Rifle, Flash Pulse, and Pistol and Close Combat. They're half a swick, but like, yeah, like you just, and they have a repeater built in. It's not deployable. It just means your repeater's standing there, beginning of the game, midfield, like your hacking net's already turn zero, it's there, which is fantastic. It means if you don't go first, you've got two come dig me out. My mimetism -3 with mines with Crazy Koalas all around me. So yeah, go ahead and send whatever skirmisher you want to come out fight me or warband me. Maybe he's got to get through my Crazy Koalas before he actually gets to me, and he's got to fight me afterwards.
Yeah, they've always been great, and now they have a new model that is fine.
It's two. It's a pack of two.
No, I see, but both of them, like the one is literally just the Securitate or Aguasil holding combi, looking down sights, and the other one is a little bit more going on.
Yeah, but doesn't have the cool cape.
Yeah, I'd have kept the capes in some way.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah, I think one's the boarding shotgun, one's the combi rifle, and they're not as interesting as the current ones. Unfortunately, I like them a lot.
Neither is wielding a boarding shotgun. One's got pistols, because pistols. Yeah,
fair enough. I guess this the pistol can be whichever one you want. Yeah, the pistol can be whoever you want. That's right. Air sounds an air with his double pistols. Also, he's got a rifle. He just never uses it. It's under his cape.
He only uses it. The pistols that's are right.
The pistols are for when he gets up close. It keeps them handy for close encounters. And then the Roadbot's the last one. It's the transforming one. There's been some debate about it because we've only seen a render as to whether or not it's a motorcycle. And I don't think it's going to be a motorcycle. I think it's going to be like the Sujan. I think it's going to be a remote on like a size three. I think everyone thinks it's going to be a size 4, but I think it's a size 3 that turns into either another size 3 or turns into a size 5. I think it stands up into a size 5 when it transforms. I don't think it's a size 4.
So wait, how does this work? Like, especially with bikes, like when they're mounted or dismounted, is it the same model? Is there another model?
So this guy's not dismounting. He's transforming, which means you take the miniature off and replace it with a different miniature, and he has two modes. So let me see if I can pull it up here. He's the...
But for bikes, it would be, no, they don't come with a different miniature. You'd have to provide your own.
Yeah. So some come with them now. Not a lot of them, but some of them do.
At the start or end, as a short movement skill, you can dismount or mount a vehicle.
Okay.
That's how that works.
And you just like pick it up and place it where it was?
The bike actually stays, and then you put a model base to base with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah. You can actually get out of the tags as well. Like your Zeta has a little robot like body part that ejects off of it that can do objectives. It can push buttons and things like that. Or yeah. Other people have pilots.
I'm gonna put the robot in the chat because it's not actually in which one color anymore. It's not in Army yet, which I think is interesting because I thought it was going to be soon. And I'll link it in the chat.
Or I think it's the only new one, isn't it?
It is the only super new one. Yeah, but there's no miniature for you. It's just a render. They did spoil stats for it, but they're not. Usually it's on Human Sphere when you go look at it, but this is just the picture so far.
Oh, I see.
It's got a heavier eye stopper.
100%.
That's what I think, right? It looks like it's going to be a size 3, and then the peripheral's a size 2. And it just changes. But I like that it's got its little chappy head.
I think they're both going to be size 3. I think he's going to be big.
I think he goes to size 5 when he transforms. I think his size.
Oh, sorry, changed. I see. He has a smaller one with him.
Yeah, he has a peripheral. He has a little peripheral which has a heavy ride stopper. And you don't have to take the peripheral either. It's an option, right? But he's got, look, it's like a submachine gun, marksman rifle profile. Apparently he has climbing plus, which is what that little hook shot in his hand is in the drawing, the robot like drawing.
Yeah. You can see it in the render too.
Yeah.
It's in his right hand.
Yeah, and he's got climbing plus when he's not a bike, I think. And then when he's a bike, he's like 8-4 movement or something like that. He's like super fast. But yeah, I think it's going to be size 3. It looks like it's going to be Sujan's size and then transform into like size 5.
Size 5,
because motorcycles are size 4 when it changes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And I'm excited because I just think it's a cool model. It's not quite as cool as the Zonautica. I love that miniature. The Zonok is so cool.
Yes,
the Tunguska.
Hey, I have him right here.
You do? That's right. I gave you the one that I had. He's such a great model because he's got his
never little, used him for Infinity.
No, that's right. What do we use him for? We used him for Snut Scrappers, that other game, Zone Raiders. We used him in Zone Raiders. He was your robot shenanigans in Zone Raiders. But I'm excited about that. I think it's just cool that they're doing new profiles like that with transformation. I think there's a lot of like opportunity there. I like they're doing like wackier profiles. They're not just sticking with just like, you know, another heavy infantry or another like kind of the same, you know what I mean, look anime style thing. Like this is cool and different. And the fact that it's a motorcycle that turns into a dude. I mean, it's already been done, but that one had a rider. This one doesn't have a rider.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I like the smaller car that goes the smaller bike.
The little sidecar buddy.
It's like, come on, Junior.
That's right. Let's go. Come sticky on this guy for me.
Oh, it's your first day on the streets, eh? That's all right. I'll set you up.
Testing begins now.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the veteran big motorcycle explaining to the small motorcycle what it's like on the streets of
Mega City.
Infinity City.
That's
yeah.
Right. Mega Infinity City. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Bike Dread. The Lawmaster, although there is actually a 012 Lawmaster. He's actually called a Lawmaster, and he's literally Judge Dredd. He has the Judge Dredd helmet.
This guy's Highway Patrol.
You get
pulled over, and then like the small one sits on the left, and like the right one, the big one comes up and comes at your passenger window.
Yeah, sorry, it's Law. the motorcycle that 012 is called Law Keepers, and he's literally Judge Dredd. He's 8-6 BS-12 motorcycle, +1 damage BS attack, min -3 courage, dodge +2 impetuous, but he can lose his impetuous now if he wants, and he keeps his mimetism dismounted, which actually makes him quite good. And he's got 1,000 profiles. He has 7 profiles: boarding shotgun, multi-pistol, because of course he's a judge, so he has to be able to do the double whammy or the explosive rounds or whatever on his pistol. He can take a specialist with a combi rifle, chain rifle, multi-pistol, specialist with combi rifle, chain rifle, multi-pistol, and a sidebot, because you can get the sidebots as well for the Lawmaster, the Lawkeeper, sorry. And then you can do Red Fury, chain rifle, multi-pistol, or specialist.
Sidebots.
Yeah, with double Red Fury. Yeah. With chain rifle, multi-pistol for 33 points. He gets spendy at that level.
He has a Red Fury.
I know. Yeah. But 2 heavy riot stoppers is no joke as well, because you're either going to try and dodge his Red Fury or shoot back his Red Fury or dodge against the Riot Stoppers. And Riot Stoppers are, they're sticky guns. No one wants to get stickied. It is hard to get out of unless you have an engineer, because you got to reset it, I think, like -9 or something ridiculous. -6, maybe.
-6, looks like. Or at least that's what the pair of -6 is.
Well, that's his close combat weapon, I'm pretty sure.
No, sorry. The
Riot Stoppers. Oh, pair ammo. Yeah. The Riot
Stoppers. Pair of -6. Yeah.
Yeah, so those, I'm pretty sure those sidebots are the same as what this guy's got. So I think they're even called sidebots in the picture. Submachine gun, heavy ride stopper.
So much, we did it twice.
Yes. Well, I think the, I don't think the Lawkeeper actually has the sidebot miniature yet. The profile's there, but there's no miniature for it. It's not actually out yet. All right. So the main event for this one was going to be primary objective points, was going to be talking about doing a list breakdown, talking about the factions we're playing in ITS 13, or sorry, 14. But I think that we've taken up, geez, it looks like we're already at an hour and a half, hour and 10 minutes. Just talking about the new releases and the new FAQ. So I think this is going to be an FAQ episode, and we'll save the list breakdown for the primary factions that we're working on right now for next one. But I'm going to talk about OSSS. I'm going to talk about my new Aleph sectorial that I'm working on. I haven't played them before. You played them a little bit, Owen, in N3. We did that store league, and yep, you played them a little bit. How, what were your thoughts on them back then?
Hard time was you couldn't get post-humans at the time, and they didn't have as many releases as they do now. Mm-hmm. So you were playing effectively with Dakinis, Yudra, and Asuras. Mm-hmm. And going heavy in Asuras is both incredibly powerful and also terrible. So my experience was you were going to win a lot of your fights because you had just better stats than people. Mm-hmm. And you had an army of remotes to go and do the objectives.
Right.
And it was, you could definitely, like, if you have access to the post-humans and the Swick to get a lot of them, the proxies are going to go out and be able to handle literally every problem you're going to come across. And any things that they can't handle, you've got Asuras and Marut. And you have fast, cheap Dakinis who can also be specialists and mm-hmm. link with Devas who offset the Dakinis' issues. Yeah. Being able to have a hacker within the group of robots to be able to give out the appropriate support wares. So mm-hmm. I found that was really good. The Yadu I found were pricey. Like, they just never got the job done. Like, they had so many different pieces of equipment, and then they would just die because mm-hmm. they're just arm 3-1 infantry dudes. Mm-hmm. They've got no wounding cap immunity shock now, because I think they didn't have the immunity to shock before.
No, they do. I think they were just NWI before. Yeah, so they're kind of pseudo 2-1 infantry now, which is nice. The other thing that you didn't have back then too is you didn't have Parvati, and Parvati's amazing because she's Doctor 2 wounds. So when she heals somebody, they come back with 2 wounds instead of 1. She's a wild card, so she can just follow the Asura around. And there's a bunch of NCOs, so you can take the Asura plus 2 orders, no, sorry, plus 2 lieutenant orders, and let the NCOs eat those lieutenant orders, and then have Parvati and her just like walk up the board with her MSV3 auto detecting all the camel markers. And if she gets knocked down, Parvati just gives her a little back rub and she gets back up with 2 wounds and she's ready to go. So there's a bunch of changes. We'll dig into it next turn, but I think that's my, I need to start a new faction to like alternate with. And right now I've gotten a lot of games in with my Nomads over 13. So 14 is going to be more, I'm going to do both sides of the coin, Morats and OSSS. I'm going to do sectorials from the evil alien AI and the human AI. What's your new focus for the season? Are you going to dig back into an army you already have?
I mean, a lot of, so I, in traveling out, I sold most of my fully painted armies, mm-hmm. Which now, unfortunately, like, I miss my Tartary. Like,
right.
Of all of the factions, with all of the changes in the way people play now, if I still had my all dogs go to heaven list, that's great. It would have been a very different tournament for me.
It's true. They wouldn't have cared about the missile bot, that's for sure. It's like, they wouldn't have cared
about many things. That's Watch right. this. I'm going to shoot all my repeaters, and I have a really good killer hacker.
Yeah.
This is a dog.
Have you tried fighting 3 cam markers that can move 6-6 and climb and censor you?
Here's my 12 camel markers and my T2 boarding shotgun. Like, No, I'm not sure yet. I tried out I played Assassins, and it's just like I remember, except for that they gave them the horrifying Sundabot, or what's he called?
Sundacoot. Yeah,
the new Sunduck bot.
Sundukbut. Sundukbut. Yeah, okay. Sundukbut.
The Sundukbut with his plus one burst neurocinetic viral rifle.
the text I got from Owen when he says, like, what is this abomination?
Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous. Got work done in every game. I don't know how you would not include it.
I like that it looks like Metal Gear. Like, it's like a
I like that it's size two.
Yeah.
And has mind layer. And unlike all the other times where it's like, hey, is that camo marker prone? No, that's a mine. It's like, no, they're both not prone.
It just stands up. Yeah. And sometimes it's neurocinetic plus one burst with a viral rifle. How about a burst for an arrow viral rifle? No big deal.
With plus one damage as well.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. With forward deployment and decoy.
It's also weird. It is one of the new profiles that because it's fun to make lists around new units. I find that when a new unit like this comes out and it's so different and so weird, I tend to like make lists around it in the beginning just to see what it can do. You know what I mean? And taking two of these things, you got four
two and you put out six. You don't bring the neurocinetic one. You bring the mind layer decoy base one, and you put out six of these camo markers for 100 points. And you pick which one is going to be the active one this turn. And he goes and he kills until he dies. And he's armor four with two structure. You're going to support wear him. Off he goes.
I know. The plus eight deployment, though, having two midfield like neurocinetic bio rifles with two wounds and armor seven in cover.
Yep.
It's so insane. Like, it's just such a like, because neurocinetic's so different from
well, it's total reaction, right? Like, it's not suppression
because you get your mods, right? So for like a midfield like corner holder where you're because you, he like, wants your to whole line of fires in 16 and you're shooting on, I mean, it's PS13 too.
Yep.
The one thing is it's very specifically not a remote, so you can't support wear it.
That's right. HI. Yeah.
It's heavy infantry. If they made it a remote,
it has the SDR. That's what I was thinking of.
Yes, exactly. And it is remote presence, but they very specifically didn't make it a remote, so you can't make it absolutely brain-meltingly. No, can't marks in it. It doesn't become brain-meltingly good. It's only insanely good, not like brain-meltingly pull your hair out good. Yeah. For this immune to shock decoy camo one use plus one damage 14 power rifle with neurosynthetics and four shots. And then if you get too close to it, it's also got a chain rifle, so don't get too close because it will just kill your skirmisher or your warband. So that guy is going to try and charge it, it just auto hits on the way in with a chain rifle. And that's the thing, is because you're neurosynthetic, you don't have to break suppression either, right? Yep. You can just sit there and you know, switch for guns freely.
Close encounters.
Yeah, but you can switch guns freely into that template or whatever that thing is. So Dan, what about you? You've got your O12. Are you happy with the faction that I forced you to play? Like, how do you feel about it?
I'm very adaptable. I do like
to, I have noticed that about you.
I'll pick something or I'm forced. But so a lot of people know me from way back when in mini wargaming, I played a lot of 40K orcs, and orcs was like my fourth choice. A lot of
which is funny because you became known as Orc Dan. Like, you
like the most orky guy ever.
And definitely not.
But it was I wanted to play Tyranids, but Matt was playing Tyranids, and so I want to play Chaos, and Dave was playing, and then I would play Tau. My other friend Dan was playing Tau, and I was like, well, what else could I was like at a loss. I was like, I don't know what I want to play, and they're like, there's orcs. And then Matt was, I think he said, don't paint them cartoony because they'll look stupid. Just telling me how to collect my faction, you know.
Right. I like that I'm now fourth in the line of people who bullied you into playing army. That doesn't make me feel good about myself or my choices, just so you know.
So I was like, okay, sure. And then it was just, I've always loved Orcs in Warcraft 3, so it kind of, I just never connected them, I guess. And it's like Space Cops. I feel like it would be the last one I'd probably pick myself. But now that I'm here, I'm like, all right, we're going to goo the whole universe. We're going to throw handcuffs on you, and you're not going to go anywhere. And you're going to like it.
You're gonna be corrupt cops. You're gonna be the worst kind of, it's all bad cops the whole time. Hit him with the bag zooka
before long.
Yeah, you need to do that. You need to do nothing but the what's it called, the Chief Wiggum voice the entire time. You gotta love what you do, Lou. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to dig into these factions, do a little faction breakdown, and then do a rate the list. So I'm gonna write up a list for my OSSS for the next episode. And then Dan's gonna write up a list and Owen's gonna write up a list, and we're gonna talk about the differences of what we came up with. We're not gonna look in advance. We'll do a little faction breakdown of all of the different unit types, talk about the theme I'm coming up with for my first list to get trying them, and then see what everybody else came up with too. Other stuff we got going on. So there is a Discord server set up now for Tactical Awareness, which you can join. I'll link it in the show notes. And the big news is I am putting together a ITS event in January on the 22nd. It'll be here in St. Catharines at the Royal Canadian Legion Hall 24. And you can find the ITS registration on Corvus Belli's OTM, the official tournament manager. And you can also find in the show notes the details for the actual event itself. So that's our first show for tonight. We rambled on about the FAQ, and we're going to get into some more stuff for each individual faction we're playing, and then see where the show goes from there. So let us know in the comments what you think about it, and we'll see you for more tactical awareness in the future. Big thanks for listening in. I'm Ash. This is Owen and Dan.